In a world where women continue to break through glass ceilings, shatter stereotypes, and redefine success, there are so many stories just waiting to be heard. And that is exactly what this podcast is all about. I'm your host, Katie Williams, and in each episode, we'll sit down together with inspiring female entrepreneurs from diverse industries, backgrounds, and stages of their journey. We'll explore the lessons they've learned, the obstacles they've overcome, and the advice they have for those who might be ready to take a leap of their own. I cannot wait to dive into the day-to-day realities of running a business, often while juggling other roles like being a mum or working multiple jobs. You can expect honest conversations, valuable advice, and a whole lot of inspiration. So grab yourself a cuppa and let's get into it. Hello and welcome to another episode of Small Biz Society, the podcast. I'm Katie and today I am joined by Leanne. Hello, Leanne.
Hi, everyone.
Hi. Would you like to start by telling us a bit about yourself and what you do?
Thank you. I'm Leanne Johnson. I'm the owner of the Drama Centre, and we specialise in transforming adults and kids' relationships with acting and public speaking. So the Drama Centre initially started as one class 7 years ago of about 20 kids, and now we've grown to, I'd say, about 25 classes a week, and we teach 600 students across Essex and London, and moving a little bit now into sort of Suffolk, Hertfordshire. And my background was I started out as an actor. I was a professional actor for 7 years and loved it, but I wanted to have, you know, it's hard being an actor. You need a steady income. You don't know where your next job's coming from. And so I decided that I would start my own company. I thought, how hard could it possibly be?
I love that. The blind optimism.
I think you need that naivety at the beginning, don't you? Yeah. Otherwise you never get it done. So yeah, that's what I do. And I've got a team of amazing teachers. We've got about 14 teachers that work with me, and we teach confidence skills, communication skills, acting. We do public speaking and acting exams for them so they can get qualifications. So yeah, but we're very focused on drama and public speaking. We don't do singing and we don't do dancing.
That's amazing. So what would you say have been some of the biggest challenges you faced so far?
I think a lot of business owners, if they crossed over COVID, I don't like to say the COVID word, but there is, if they, you know, were trading before and then had to keep their businesses going, I'd say that's probably the biggest challenge. Also compounded by the fact that I was, when COVID hit, 3 months away from having my second child. So I was trying to juggle keeping all of my team employed and paid, because there just wasn't enough sort of support from the government at that point. So I was trying to keep them employed, trying to keep the kids in classes because they massively missed them in terms of their mental health, and it was really important for them to have structure. So we had to move everything online, and as a medium, drama, you know, it can work online, absolutely, but it's such a human experience when you're doing drama and acting, and I just felt that we really missed being in the room with each other. So that was a huge challenge, just trying to survive COVID. But we did. And then I had a very traumatic birth with my daughter, and I had to have an emergency C-section with her. This was as I'm still trying to run the business, because as I'm sure you know, not many of us business owners get any maternity leave because we're still trying to keep our businesses running. So I was in hospital for a little while with her after I had her. And I'd say that's the biggest challenge, because then I was trying to get better, and I had like post-traumatic stress disorder, and I was trying to keep a business going at the same time as trying to look after other people's mental health. I think I neglected my own healing from that. Yeah. And it took me a long time to get better. Then I was diagnosed with Hashimoto's disease. I think it's from the trauma of the birth. So it was just another thing. And yeah, but you know, as a parent and as a business owner, I feel you tend to put yourself maybe last, and I've learned how to actually start getting better at putting myself, like prioritizing myself more. So I think that was a huge challenge. It seems like it was just yesterday that happened, really. But gosh, it's what, 4 years ago now, isn't it?
Yeah, it's quite crazy to think how quickly the time has gone.
Yeah.
But that's amazing that you've learned to sort of put yourself up the rank a bit, because yeah, it's really true. You put sort of generally everything above yourself. But that's really good that you've acknowledged that. And you know, I've started to sort of look, am I looking after myself a bit more? occasionally. But I definitely don't look after myself as well as I should.
Yeah, I think that's true for a lot of us, isn't it?
Yeah. So what has been your proudest moment so far in business?
Gosh, there's so many. I mean, in terms of like we won the Theo Pafita Small Business Sunday Award last year, which was amazing. And so we went to the award, the award ceremony a couple months ago, and meeting Theo Pafitis, which was brilliant, and getting our certificate, our award, which was fantastic. So that's a huge achievement. But in terms of just what I'm the most proud of running my business, I think it's some of the students' transformations that I see. You know, we have students that come in, and we're very inclusive as a company. You know, I have ADHD, my son is autistic and has ADHD, and I feel really lucky to be in that situation because I know how neurodivergent brains sort of can work differently. So it keeps me open to the kids and the adults' needs that we have. So when we have a student that comes in and says they've been to loads of drama schools and they've not fit in, or they've said that maybe that, you know, they've been told by the principals, we don't think this is right for you. Not only does that fill me with overwhelming sadness, but then, you know, it's our job to make sure that we are inclusive, that we make sure we know what triggers them, that we know what their strengths are and the things that they need higher support for. And those students that come in being told by the parents, these are their triggers, this is what will happen if those triggers, you know, that happen, these are the behaviours that we'll see. And to not ever see those behaviours because they feel in a safe space, and then to see them progress from that to being someone that would sit in a corner to getting into the National Youth Theatre. You know, it's the transformations like that which make me feel so proud and make me feel I was so, you know, I'm so happy that I decided to start this business so I could help young people like that. Because, you know, being an undiagnosed ADHDer for, you know, 37 years, I just thought this is how everyone functioned. I thought this is how people's brains were. But actually, you're given this sort of piece of information that you think, okay, now my life makes sense. And then you can help other people with that. And yeah, I'm really proud of that, of helping, just helping young people. Because I think if I had maybe been in a situation 30 years ago, maybe I would have been more confident earlier.
Yeah.
Maybe. Yeah, I think
that's amazing. And as someone that is yet to be diagnosed, but 99% sure, I've got ADHD and my kids, again, we're going through the process and the very, very long process of waiting to be assessed. Yeah. There are things that they really struggle with, and a lot of systems don't cater to them. And you know, my son's had some issues at school, and I remember speaking to a teacher, and they said, you know, how does he learn best? How can I, because this isn't working. And yeah. I'm like, I don't know. I'm not the one teaching him. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? Like, I don't know how he learns best, but clearly, however he's being taught at secondary school isn't the way that helps him. Yeah. So the fact that, you know, there are businesses out there to be more accessible for people that don't fit the norm as such, I think that's incredible.
Well, yeah, I so agree with you in terms of, especially with schools, it's it's a very rare thing that, like, schools are amazing. Teachers work really hard, but they've been trained in a certain way, which maybe isn't neurodivergent friendly or thinking more outside the box in terms of, like, teaching styles. So, you know, I in my experience, it was a very long wait for us. We were in a lucky position that I just went privately and made sure that we got his diagnosis, because then it would help him at school. But even then, when you get a diagnosis, they're like, here's a leaflet, here's a pamphlet pack, off you go. Yeah. There's no, you know, what strategies can I use as a parent to try and help my child navigate through this world where their brain is working in a different way? And so then it just opens up, you have to then do all the research. It's your, you know, they put the onus on you. You've got to do this research. You've got to try and seek out a school that will cater to his needs, or, you know, this is the way he works. It's really, really tricky. And I think we're really lucky with our primary school. My son is really valued there, and they know exactly what to do to help him be the best he can be and to be the most emotionally supported as well as academically. But that's just, I know that's not the case across the country.
Yeah, I think it is. It's completely different everywhere, isn't it? And I guess it depends. And, you know, I have no nothing against teachers. I know how hard they work. But yeah, I just don't think it's good enough. But it's different everywhere. Yeah, I mean, yeah. It was a lot better in primary school than it is now in secondary.
Yeah.
And whether that's because it's smaller, I don't know, but yeah. Okay, so obviously you do the drama and you do the public speaking. So how do you help, like, business owners improve their communication skills?
It's really interesting. I get lots of different people coming on as a client, and lots of them feel like if they do a public speaking course or they get one-to-one time with me, that it will rid them of their nerves. But that isn't what it will do. And I try to get people to reframe what nerves are and try and get them to use them in, you know, so that you can use them to help and aid your energy when you're doing public speaking. Because if anyone says that they're not nervous when they stand on stage in front of 3,000 people, I don't believe them. And if they are actually telling the truth, then it makes me wonder, well, why aren't you nervous? Because, you know, you want to do well, you want to give your audience value, you want to create connection with your audience. So I've seen people perform on stage as public speakers, and I've maybe spoken to them, and I know that they weren't nervous. And what I feel that it does, it takes some energy away from that. And you need energy, because people feed off energy. It's like an exchange of energy when you're public speaking. So I get people to embrace the nerves and say, you might never not be nervous, but that's okay. It's only when the nerves start to become overwhelming and take your skill set and make your mind blank, that's when it becomes an issue for people. So it's working on strategies to help bring down their stress levels, you know, things like breathing exercises, things like visualization exercises. It's almost similar to hypnobirthing, really. I did hypnobirthing for both of my kids.
Okay.
And was so amazed at the power of the mind over the body. And it's the same with public speaking. You know, your brain is really amazing. And if you vividly imagine scenarios and you repeat that, so this is an exercise I tell some business owners to do, have them imagine a scenario where all the colors and the senses are heightened. So I'll take them through a visualization exercise. Maybe they're standing on stage somewhere, and I'll get them to think of what they can smell, what they can see, what they can hear. And then I'll ask them to increase the intensity of all those senses. And then I'll say, right, your task is you need to reimagine that scenario every day for 5 minutes over the next 6 weeks. And the brain's really clever, because then it can start to believe that successful scenario has happened, and it gives people a bit more confidence about actually I can do this.
Yeah.
And there's loads of strategy and technique to help business owners. And I also think it's really important to say that you're not trying to be someone else. You are you. You will always be you. People have specific speaking patterns and tones and pitch of the voice. It's not about trying to cookie cut business owners to sound a certain way, or to watch successful speakers and go, oh, well, they do this gesture, maybe I should bring that in. We need to try and get that out of people's minds and think, actually, you are enough. You are amazing. And we need to just focus on making you feel confident and just working with giving you the best skill set that you can have, because there is nothing wrong with you. You just need to sort of believe in yourself more. I think it's just a imposter syndrome, self-belief. It just stops people from wanting to speak in public. People are terrified of it.
I am.
Are you?
Oh, absolutely. I am. I've always been terrified of it. I remember when I applied to uni at 18, and we had to do like a role play thing. And I remember sitting there waiting for my turn. My whole body was shaking, like, yeah, ridiculous. Literally, my whole body was shaking. And yeah, it's just always absolutely terrified me. And I don't know why, because I could sit in a group of people and quite happily talk to them. Yeah. But then I think if I have to like stand up and address the room as such, there's, I don't know, that something switches in me and I'm like, oh.
It's so common. I mean, it's the number one fear in the world.
Is it?
Fear of public speaking. People are more scared of standing up and speaking in front of people than they are of dying. And if you said that to someone, they would say, that's ridiculous. Of course that's not true. But it actually is when you speak to people. And there's so many successful people, like in business, that I have worked with. And exactly like you, that they can talk to a room of people. But when they're standing apart from them, it is that fight or flight. All of a sudden you feel that adrenaline kick in. You feel those nerves. You think, I don't want to do this. I don't want to do this. So it's about acknowledging those fears and then sort of digging a bit deeper. Well, why do you feel like that? And there's loads of different reasons why people feel like that. You could say it's like the caveman theory, when you're not part of a group, you are an other person, and then you are being observed. That puts, like, you know, you are in danger, and that part of your brain kicks in. Or it might be that, for example, if you have ADHD, you have been, what is it, 20,000 more negative messages by the time you're 10, 11 as a person with a neurodivergence than someone that's neurotypical. So that fear of judgment, that constant fear of judgment, because you have been told one way or another that your behaviors aren't appropriate, or maybe you've masked. So, you know, there's lots of noise going on in your brain. If something's gone wrong previously, then maybe you're recalling that memory. There's loads of reasons why people are scared, but it's about getting you over the first hurdle. How can you, you know, take that leap, do some public speaking, say, right, here we are, you've done your first one, let's unpick it. Did it go well? How did you feel? And then it's about practicing. But so many people don't get to that point. They don't want to practice. And it's like, you know, how can we practice? Can you go on Facebook? Can you make yourself a private group, and then just go live to no one and practice that? Can you, you know, go on podcasts, things like that? I always say to people, just chatting to people, you know, in a public forum, that's all public speaking, and just hopefully getting them that self-belief. But for some people there's lots of work to be done, and you have to really dig deep and to understand what their fears are, and then try and unpick those and then build them up.
And do you do that? So when you're working with people, do you go that deep and really sort of apart everything?
Absolutely, because one person might think that, for example, like box breathing is really helpful for them and that will calm them down. But for other people, that doesn't work. So we're going to have to try different techniques to find out what actually works for you and for your brain. And everyone works differently because of, you know, your own lived life experience is so different with everyone. So at the moment, I just finished a cohort when there was five of us, and we were doing public speaking for people in business, and it's asking about, it's getting them to be really vulnerable, really, at the first point, and say, what are the worst things you think about yourself? Getting them to list them. I'm not good enough. My voice sounds awful. I've got bad diction, articulation. Can't say my THs properly. Things like this. I'll get them to write it all down. And then we start reframing exercises. It's like, okay, now you're going to visualize if you have a child in your life, a son or daughter, or someone, you know, that's connected to you, niece, nephew, something like that. And now you're going to say those things to that child. You're not good enough. Your voice sounds awful. Your diction's terrible. And think of how damaging that is to say that to a child. But you're saying it to yourself every day, and you're being so unfair to yourself. So it's about getting people to think, oh God, I'd never say that to a child. Well, then what's the difference between you and a child? You're still a human person with feelings. So yeah,
that's such a powerful exercise.
Yeah, wow.
Because there are things that I think we say to ourselves that, yeah, we'd never say to
absolutely
our kids. Or
yeah, we're so harsh on ourselves, aren't we? All the time. Yeah. And that's exhausting for our brains. Of course, people are walking around thinking, you know, with imposter syndrome, I'm not good enough. Or look at this person here, they're doing beautifully. But you don't know what's going on in everyone's heads or behind closed doors.
No.
Yeah. Are you going to do that exercise, Katie?
I think I might. I think you should.
Yeah.
It's a bit daunting, though. But
yeah, it is.
I think I probably should.
You should. I mean, I am relatively introverted as a person. When I grew up, I was quite shy. I think that was because I probably masked for a lot of my life, not knowing that I had ADHD. But I was an actor, and I would be on stage in London. I would film. And it's like a switch that can flick for me. And I get those nerves and feel the adrenaline. I love that. And that's like a dopamine fix, maybe. Maybe that's why I love it.
Yeah.
And it's just trying to get people to be passionate about public speaking. And what I'm so passionate about is getting people young to just normalize public speaking. Because the younger you can get people excited about standing up in front of people and speaking, then they will carry that through their lives and think, well, it's fine because I performed to those 300 people when I was 11. And you get them to try and build on those experiences. So I feel like there needs to be more public speaking in schools. It needs to be part of the curriculum. I go into schools a lot. I've got a program called See Me Now, Hear Me Now. And it's about empowering children to have a voice and to know that their opinion and their voice is valued and it matters, because the amount of children that I work with who feel like what they have to say is not important, people don't care, is heartbreaking. So I go in and say, what you just did there was amazing. And they're like, oh, I don't think anyone's interested. We absolutely are interested. As humans, we are so curious and we want to share stories and energy and connection with people. So I think, yeah, if we can try and get it into schools, that's my aim. That's like my goal, to try and get public speaking more into schools, because that would just be the best thing.
That would be brilliant. I mean, I don't know what the youngest children, does that make sense? I don't know what age you start from with the children you work. Because obviously, from my own experience, my eldest, when he was probably around the age five mark, he used to go to like a dance group, and he loved it, absolutely loved it. He'd, you know, get there and do all his dancing and everything, and he even did a couple of their shows. But then, you know, within the next couple of years, I guess it just gets to that point where they start getting critical of themselves and thinking what other people are thinking of them. He ended up quitting because he couldn't take part anymore. They used to do this thing where they had like a circle and they took turns like jumping in and, you know, doing a dance move. And he just couldn't do it. And I mean, I found that with my youngest as well. He's nearly seven. And the other day he does drum lessons at the moment. And a couple of weeks ago they said, he's like done a whole song. So the next lesson I'll go in and watch him. So this week I went in and watched him, and he messed up a couple of times. You know, it didn't quite go as he'd hoped. And we came home and he was so upset. He was really disappointed. He was really cross with himself. I mean, I think there's potential autism there, and his emotions aren't regulated very well. But yeah, he was really disappointed in himself, really cross. You know, I don't want to do it ever again. Because I think that he was under that pressure to try and perform.
Yeah.
And as much as we, you know, me and his teacher, I said that it's absolutely okay. And, you know, I was like, you did amazing. Because I haven't watched him since he first started. And obviously he's come a long way. But I think they get to an age where there is pressure on them and they don't, I think, fear of judgment maybe from others.
Yeah, I so agree. I think when you're about 6 or 7, probably going up into year 5, I think you are a bit more free of the knowledge that people can judge you and then be vocal about it. I see we've got lots of really enthusiastic students in our younger class, so sort of our 6 to 11 class, and then they will start to have more self-doubt as they go into the second class, which is the teenage class, because yeah, those hormones are raging as well, which makes you feel just like the most rubbish in the whole world. And yeah, and I think what I was really adamant about when I started the drama center was that we wouldn't have dance, because that wasn't one of my strengths, and I always felt quite self-conscious. I was quite a good dancer, but I didn't pick up choreography very well. I'd have to really, really focus. And then I'd feel awful when I got it wrong. And so I was like, you know, I'm going to work on my strengths in the business. What am I really good at? I'm a really good actor and I love speaking. So let's focus on those two things. But what I find is when we go to the teenage class, which is nice for us, we get loads more boys in there.
Okay.
Because I think by that age, you know what you don't want to do. And if they don't want to do singing and dancing, then they come to us and then they can just do acting and focus on the acting. But yeah, you start to see kids, you know, change and start to become more aware of how they're being perceived. So it's just keeping them on the right track and saying, you're amazing, you're confident, like, you know, just keep going.
Yeah.
Don't let self-doubt sort of hold you back. But that's really hard. It's really hard to do.
Yeah. I think, yeah, something like that is a big help.
Yeah.
No. Okay, so how do you plan your time? Do you plan your time? Do you think you've got like a good work-life balance?
I try. When I started the business, it was very much a case of, oh, I'll reply to every email, like, you know, within 48 hours. I was very, but then obviously as you get busier, you have to start prioritizing things differently. What works in my brain best is to time block things out on my calendar and have a visual of that and color coordinate it. So my work might be pink because my logo is pink and green, and then I might have my family time, which might be blue or purple, so I can have those visuals of the week ahead. And then I'll also, the things that are high priority, I always have like a notice. So in my office here, I've got a notice board, like a whiteboard, and I'll put the three highest priorities of my day on there.
Okay.
So then I keep looking at it. I think object permanence is something that people with ADHD sometimes struggle with, and that's certainly the case for me. If it's not out in front of me, then I will forget that it's there and that it exists. Like my kitchen, I have to have, you know, I can't put things away in the same way that normal people, neurotypical people, there's no such thing as normal, neurotypical people would maybe do, because I need to know, you know, if I'm having breakfast, I need to make sure my granola is out, and I need to make sure that because otherwise I'll be like, where is it? You know, I've put it in a cupboard, because that would be the most sensible thing to do. So I think with my work, I need a visual. I need to keep looking at it, so it keeps reminding my brain. I'm very much trying to work with my brain, because it likes to go off on a tangent and think, oh no, this is a really important thing. No, this is more important. It's like, no, you've set your objectives for the day. So keep going back to those. That's how I tend to, but there's things that pop up, like all people, you know, something that happens that's more of an emergency, or you have to firefight a little bit, it's not easy running a business and a team because, again, everyone is human. So sometimes you'll have a very panicked phone call saying, I can't teach this class. And then you have to, and then things tend to escalate from there. Yeah. Things come in all at the same time, don't they? It's like buses, you know, you don't see one and then three come
oh,
at
absolutely.
Once. Yeah. So that's how I try and organize my day. It works for me.
Yeah. That's the thing. Yeah. I think different systems work for different people. Right. So do you plan your social media? Do you do your own social media?
I didn't. I used to just do it ad hoc when inspiration hit me. I think, and I don't think there is anything wrong with that. However, since I started to plan my social media, I did. I've been working with the clever content creator, Chantel. I did a workshop a couple of weeks ago with her. And so we put content pillars in place. And I find that Reels get better reach for me. So I've started to be more consistent with Reels. And just in 2 weeks, like, the reach has gone up from me planning my social media content has gone up from something like, I don't know, 3,400 to like 8,300 just in two
Amazing.
Weeks. Yeah. So I once I've seen the result, like, I'm very results based. I need to see tangible evidence that something's working.
Yeah.
And that's, for me, is okay. I'm planning my content, you know.
Yeah. And it can be a bit annoying sometimes because it can take a little bit of time for the analytics to obviously update.
Absolutely.
So you're like, you know, is it doing anything? And then you look at it and go, oh, it is.
Yeah, absolutely. So I do plan my content now. But when I first started out, I didn't. And I think there's nothing wrong with that. I think as long as you're showing up, then and committing to getting better and committing to improving, then you will get to the point where you think, okay, I do need to plan now because it's going to be more time effective and it's going to help me with my audience reach.
Yeah. Do you enjoy doing it?
I love social media. Yeah. I find that I have such great connections with people online on social media and I think it's fun. My partner, James, who also helps me run the business, he's not so much of a fan, but people seem to like that. And he's fine with me. He's fine with me putting content of his disdainful face. I said, are you sure it's okay? And he's like, yeah, it's okay. But yeah, people seem to find that funny. But yeah, I think it's really important. I think sometimes it's overwhelming when you want time off.
Yeah.
And you feel like I've got to commit to the algorithm because, you know, if I take that week off, I've worked hard. But I don't think that should let it stop people from taking a break because
it's scary. I mean, I took a week off a couple of weeks ago because we went away and I was really nervous about it because I'd worked so hard to sort of get my reach up and, you know, and obviously it has gone down, but that's inevitable because I didn't post anything. So of course it's going to go down. So now I'm just working on getting it back up again.
Yeah, that's it. And it's like anything, isn't it? Some people say, oh, right, I'm coming off social media, I'm having like a cleanse. And if you need to do that for your mental health, then that's what you need to do. If you can get someone to take it over for you, that's, you know, that's helpful. But if it's you that runs your social media and you want to continue doing that, yeah, don't be scared of taking some time away from it.
The thing is, I think there's so much pressure. Like, people feel really pressured to get things amazing. But I mean, social media, I think, is great for us as business owners to get ourselves out there because it's a free marketing tool. But at the end of the day, it's social media.
Yeah.
And I think it should be fun. It should be enjoyable. You know, we should point. And don't get me wrong, there are times when I'm stressed and I'm like, oh, I don't know what to do. But if that's like a recurrent thing, we shouldn't be at that point.
Yeah, I totally agree with you when, you know, people think it needs to be perfect. I think a few years ago, people thought that Instagram had to be really aesthetically pleasing. You'd have a really beautiful looking grid. But since the birth of TikTok, it's changed so much. Some of the best performing reels that I've done on TikTok, like, it's probably got, you know, 40,000 views and 900 likes and 500 comments, has literally been a really grainy video of me filming students in class doing a drama exercise and then posting it and saying, have you played this? Like, play it, let us know how it doesn't, and you can't predict what's going to go crazy and people really connect with. So you just sort of keep trying, you keep trying different things and measuring and testing. But yeah, I'll never now think, oh, that's not good enough quality video. I'll literally just chuck it on. I did a supercar experience last week for my birthday, and I drove like these four supercars, like round a track really fast. And I just got my partner James to film it, put that on Instagram, like 4,500 views. People,
amazing.
Yeah, it's just a really, you know, badly cut. He filmed it landscape. I put it portrait.
Oh.
Yeah, but if it speaks to people, people don't mind. They want more realism, I think, now.
Yeah, definitely. I agree. So what keeps you motivated when things get a bit much?
I think it's important to have goals in your mind. I have a vision board that I've got really, and because I'm such a visual person, they have to be pictures. They don't have much writing on it. So, you know, a picture of Japan when the cherry blossoms out, you know, that's what I want to do. I want to be able to go and do that. I want to be able to franchise my business. So I've put a picture of, you know, a franchise, you know, with lots of sort of lines across the country. I think it's good to have those goals to keep you motivated, but sometimes it does just get too much. It does become an overwhelm. And I think at that point, you just need to listen to your body. Sometimes it's hard to actually understand what you're feeling. So try a few different things. What I tend to do to help is say, right, I'm going to take this hour and I'm going to go into the garden and I'm going to do some gardening. I'm going to be with my plants, or I'll go to the garden center and I'll just have a look around, because that's the only thing that calms my brain. Gardening is this, yeah. Meditation doesn't seem to work for me, but doing gardening, which is hard work, but that seems to calm my brain down. And I think if you're constantly in it and you don't take the time, you don't take the step back, you just will burn out.
Yeah.
You will burn out. So it's really important for you to understand what that looks like for you heading towards burnout, and not feeling guilty about taking that step back so that you can take that time. And usually when I'm gardening, I'm like, oh, actually, I've got a really good idea how I can problem solve this as I'm doing it. So I think it, you know, we'll go for a walk, take the dog out. I think taking a step back is such an important strategy in terms of helping you achieve your goals and stay motivated.
Yeah. I agree. I think that's great. And obviously you touched upon a little bit there, but what are your plans for the future, the Drama Centre?
So yes, we're franchising, which I'm so excited about and slightly terrified at the same time.
That's okay. As you said, that's a good.
I'm working with Jo Middleton, who's like the franchising queen.
Okay.
And I'm doing a course called Scale. So she's basically every week taking us through everything you need to know about franchising and franchising ethically, which is obviously so important to us as a company. So got my trademark 2 weeks ago. That was all confirmed. So yeah, we're franchising. So we're going to be spreading across the country, giving other people an opportunity to run a, you know, a successful business that gives you good money and it gives you flexibility. So if you love performing arts and drama and public speaking, then yeah, that's who we're going to be targeting. And that's what we're going to be doing over the next 12 months, which yeah, that's I'm exciting. Sort of quite, yeah, I'm quite deep in it at the moment. So yeah, maybe we'll have a chat when I'm at the other side.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. But yeah, that's the plan.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Okay, are you ready for the quick fire five?
Yes, I'm ready, I think.
All right. Who is your biggest inspiration?
My son.
That's lovely.
Do you want me to give reasons, or do you just want me to say it loud? Just quickly.
You can if you want to. How old is your son?
He's nearly 8, and he's one of the most creative people I know. Sometimes he'll give me ideas for things to do in the business, like workshops and things. And his joy and passion for life Absolutely astound me. You know, this is a child that tell me all the kings and queens in order of when they were on the throne, and I'm learning from him every day. And he was the reason I started the business, really. So he's my inspiration.
That's lovely. Do you have a favourite business book?
Yes, I think the one that I've learned the most from is Lisa Johnson's How to Make Money Online. I love that.
Do you have a favourite business podcast?
Yes, I do. Charlie Day's Sales is Easy.
Yes.
If you just know how. I love that. I think, and it's I always listen to it when I'm on a dog walk, and then I get really excited about new ideas that I can bring to the business.
Brilliant. What is your guilty pleasure?
Celebrity Gogglebox. I love it. I'm obsessed with it. I keep going on Channel 4 going, when's the next series?
I've never actually watched Gogglebox. Like, I've seen clips of it, but I've never watched a full episode.
I love the celebrity one. I think it just fills me with such joy. I can't watch it with my partner. He's a bit of a TV snob. I love it. I think sometimes you need something that's not challenging for your brain.
Oh, yeah. We when we watch series, because we quite like binge watching series together, and we always have at least two series on the go, because I need something that I don't have to concentrate too much on, because if I'm tired, I'm like, no, I can't watch that one tonight, let's watch this one.
Absolutely.
Okay, and what is your favorite biscuit?
I'm gonna have to say a bourbon biscuit, because I don't want to go too fancy. Bourbon is like solid choice. If there's a selection, I'm going for the bourbon.
Good choice. All right. What is one piece of advice you would give to somebody just starting out in business?
Don't wait until everything is perfect. It will never be perfect. If I waited until my business plan and everything was perfect, I would never have started, because I'm such a perfectionist. So I'm glad that I just took the ball by the horns and just started it. And you will just learn as you go. You know, you're not inexperienced in your field. You know what you're talking about. You just have to have that self-belief. Get stuff out there. You can tweak things as you go. So yeah, don't wait till it's perfect.
Brilliant. Okay, and finally, let us know where we can find you.
So if my SEO is working correctly, you can just Google the Drama Centre and we should be one of the first ones to pop up. I hang out on Instagram a lot, and we are at the Drama Centre UK. And if you go onto our website and hit free stuff, you'll get some how to improve your public speaking and some techniques and tips. And our website is thedramacentre.co.uk.
Amazing. Thank you so much for coming on today. It's been really lovely talking to you.
I've loved it.
I'll leave all your details in the show notes. So I'll make sure I get all the right links from you. And thank you so much for listening today. I hope you enjoyed the episode, and I will see you in the next one. Thank you again so much for listening to today's episode. I really hope you enjoyed it. If you did, please consider leaving a review and make sure you're following me so you don't miss out on future episodes. And if you're interested in being a guest yourself, just reach out and we can have a chat. All the details of where you can find me are in the show notes of each episode. So let's connect, and I can't wait to see you next time.